Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine. Plus, global business, finance, and tech news. The Bloomberg Business Week podcast with Carol Messer and Tim Stenebeck from Bloomberg Radio.
Bit of a roller coaster ride in shares of Amazon, from a rally right after earnings to a drop on the analyst call last night to some selling today, but it's definitely off its lows of the session. Amazon, though, seeing some pressure after warning that growth in its cloud computing business is cooling. So let's get into it, because Amazon is a massive company with a lot of moving parts. To break it down, Spencer Soper is with us, Bloomberg News technology and e-commerce reporter on Zoom out there in Seattle, along with Poonam Goyal, senior analyst for e-commerce Athleisure, off-price retail at Bloomberg Intelligence. She is on the phone in New Jersey. Guys, thank you so much for being with Maddie and me. Spencer, kick it off for us in terms of the story that is Amazon on this Friday.
Yeah, well, yesterday it was a head scratcher. You know, we got the earnings release came out after market close, and there's a lot of good news in it. You know, they beat pretty much across the board in all their businesses more than analysts were expecting, both in the cloud computing revenue side, you know, on its e-commerce business, on its advertising business. Everything was looking really good. And then about 90 minutes later on the analyst call, they divulged that, you know, cloud computing sales are actually slowing down a little bit so far in April. And the market, that really jostled the market. People got nervous and shares started going down from there. So it really was a reaction to just the outlook of Amazon's cloud computing business is what the market reacted to today.
Poonam, what was the moment on the earnings call where the tenor started to shift from extreme excitement to, oh no?
I'd agree with Spencer here. You know, as soon as they said that there's a 500 basis point deceleration in AWS in the month of April, that was it. I mean, that was really the big drawback on the earnings call. And from there, it didn't matter what they said.
Well, as I said, like Amazon, massive company, a lot of moving parts. Some are more important than others, bring a lot more in terms of the top and bottom line. Back to you, Spencer, for a moment. Cloud, I mean, it is so important to Amazon and the story. Is there any kind of, okay, guys, 24 hours later, a little bit of perspective, there's still, it's big, but we've all been kind of worried a little bit about cloud, or is it just a little rough considering some of the other big tech names, aka Microsoft and their cloud business this week?
Well, there were some questions more broadly about Amazon. You know, so there was the slowing in the cloud, but also questions about whether it could be losing its competitive position, and even concerns about, you know, what's the fate of like the voice activated assistant Alexa now that we've got things like ChatGPT and things coming along that have kind of relegated the voice activated stuff kind of to the sidelines. There's definitely concerns beyond simply slowing cloud sales, but that's still the predominant thing. Is if businesses are cutting their spending, and Amazon's saying that, and they're saying yes, our cloud customers are trying to reduce costs or looking for other ways to store data that are less expensive, we're trying to help accommodate them, that basically this slowdown will persist and could get worse.
All right, guys, and I also want to kind of pivot to AI, right? This has been the, you know, words, catchphrases, if you will, that I feel like in this earnings season that every CEO to some extent has to drop, especially if you're in the tech space. So Poonam, in terms of what they had to say, and I know you really focus on the retail side of the business, but how much was Amazon kind of pushed and asked and queried about when it came to AI?
you know, AI is something that they are going to continue to push on across all of their businesses. So it's just not on the cloud side, but also on the retail side. AI is very important because if you think about how consumers shop, if Amazon can get smarter about their search queries, about how they pitch product to the customer, then that can lead to higher conversion. So I don't think AI is just about the cloud. You know, we've heard a lot about generative AI and so forth, and it's a topic that we think they will definitely push hard on, and along with other retailers in space, everyone is focused on AI just to really use data to make better decisions across every piece of the organization, not just, you know, when it comes to product, but also on the back end side, whether it's distribution, logistics, back office, et cetera.
I guess the way I think about it, though, is that the cloud is sort of the bones that allow for the generative AI to do its thing. Spencer, when you look at Amazon, Microsoft, and Google this week in terms of what we learned in earnings, which do you feel has the best bones when it comes to the cloud that's needed to run generative AI?
Well, that's the thing that Amazon CEO Andy Jassy was trying to say to analysts last night is, listen, all of this stuff runs on the cloud, and Amazon is the market leader there and has the data space and the infrastructure. And it's always tried to position itself more as kind of the back end of it and the tools that people can utilize. And that's where it's positioning itself now. They don't necessarily, not in the forefront with some consumer-facing thing that people are using, but providing the tools to help sharpen and hone these technological advancements going forward. But yeah, folks still seem to be a little worried about Amazon's place in it. But I think generally the tenor on the market reaction is more just about the basic cloud computing business and just folks, businesses in general, cutting their costs, including in their cloud infrastructure.
Yeah, it's just kind of interesting because I do feel like we're increasingly using more and more cloud space, whether it's personally or professionally. Poonam, come on in on the retail side of their business and what we saw there, because things have really changed since the pandemic. It's a story we've been telling for some time.
Yeah, you know, the retail side of the business has been mixed. It was better than expected this quarter. But I think what we have to think about is the 1P versus 3P part of Amazon. And it's the 3P which continues to show outsized growth and we think will be a big driver to GMV going forward for Amazon. You know, Buy with Prime is a big initiative that they have in place that can really bring more sellers using their services onto the platform and just open Amazon up to other people. It's been a huge success from what we've heard from them. And I think it'll just really help them also solve their distribution / warehousing initiatives where they can use some of that space to non-prime merchandise.
Well, yeah. And I thought, well, forgive me. And I thought the advertising, right, services business, and I'm not sure if this is what you are specifically talking about. I mean, this has really been a growth area, Poonam, for the company.
Yeah, advertising is separate from the online piece, but it definitely has been an area that they're growing in. And keep in mind, the advertising business is also a very profitable business. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they've said in their shareholder letter that they want to go after grocery, and grocery is laser-thin profit margins, low single digits at best, whereas the advertising business carries 50% plus profit margins. So lucrative, just like the cloud business, which has very high profit margins and contributes almost entirely to all of Amazon's profits.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense then on all of those headlines that Amazon was on such a tear after the earnings came out yesterday. Spencer, we've got about a minute left on this here. I'm wondering, when you look at today's trade, the share price is basically a little bit over where they were at before earnings even came out. So still up on the week. But do you think that performance, is that justified by the earnings, or do you think it's a result of Microsoft doing so well and then Amazon coming out later? What do you make of the trade impact?
Yeah, I mean, they're basically right back where they started, right? So there might have been some encouragement among investors based on the Microsoft news, and we saw kind of a run-up as the day progressed in Amazon share price before the earnings, and then once they divulged the cloud news, it tanked. So I mean, who knows? But the big worry now is, does the April slowdown in cloud sales persist? And is that just a sign of worse things to come later?
Hey guys, really quickly, 20 seconds each. Spencer, did Amazon answer all your questions on the call? And if not, what would you have wanted to know more about?
Yeah, they addressed most things. Yeah.
Poonam, just real quickly, your thoughts too?
Yeah, I think they kind of gave a good outline in their press release and on their call on all of their business segments. So they did do a good job of explaining it. I'd just love to see what else they're going to do on grocery following up on the shareholder letter, just the path to how they will make grocery a bigger piece of Amazon.
All right, guys, thank you so much. Covering all sides of Amazon. Spencer Sober, tech and e-commerce reporter at Bloomberg News there on Zoom from Seattle. And of course, our Poonam Goyal, senior analyst for e-commerce, athleisure, off-price retail at Bloomberg Intelligence on the phone in New Jersey. We said Amazon shares, they're down, but they're definitely off their lows of the session.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's Stifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern. Listen on Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, and the Bloomberg Business app. Or watch us live on YouTube.
Sleep down in the soil.
All right, everybody. Catching up on the market close here with our TV colleagues, Romain and Scarlett. One of the things we did talk about, and we saw some really strong outperformance today, was the energy names. Energy stocks were the top performing major industry group out of 11 in the S&P 500 today, at Exxon, Mobil, and Chevron, reaping profits not seen since oil topped $145 a barrel in 2008. It's kind of wild considering where oil trades today. So let's get to it, our roundtable. Bloomberg News U.S. oil reporter Kevin Crowley is on the phone from Houston. Also with us is Simone Foxman, Bloomberg News reporter here in our Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio. A lot to get through. Let me just get some initial thoughts from you, Simone, in terms of what we got from these two players.
Yeah, well, Exxon clearly the standout as opposed to Chevron if we're comparing, but both of these oil majors beating expectations by a wide margin. And we're seeing profits from these companies that we haven't seen since 2008. Remember 2008, $145 a barrel. Right. Think about where we are with crude right now. We're looking at $80 a barrel, $79.54 at the close for Brent. So clearly a different region. Exxon seems to have made bank a little bit by investing a lot of money pre-pandemic. That was something that its investors were very concerned about. But now that there's higher oil prices, we're seeing a lot of demand. Meanwhile, Chevron, you know, the concerning thing here for investors was that production dropped in the first quarter. Mm-hmm. That said, you know, we still ended up for the day. So, and generally, as you said, energy strong today.
All right. So, Kevin, come on in on this. So how is it that they are able to be so profitable in a very different, fundamentally oil-priced market?
Well, really, I mean, I think we have to go back to the pandemic, because both of these companies, they really cut expenditure a lot during COVID-19, when we all remember crude went negative one day. And really, since coming out of COVID, obviously, the demand has roared back. But these company spending levels have not come back as quickly. They're actually both Exxon and Chevron are both spending a lot less than they were in 2019 before COVID. So you have pretty strong income from decent commodity prices, but you have that very low spending and there's been a real hesitancy to build major projects around the world, that's why they're really making that margin at the moment.
I forgot, you know, that the prices went negative, which was really crazy. It was such a nutty time. Kevin, continue with us for a moment, because we know that it's really important for the energy companies to spend and to invest. I mean, at this point, even though we're shifting to a renewable world, increasingly, we're still largely dependent on fossil fuel. So if there isn't the spend, that makes me a little nervous about what kind of supplies we'll see in the future.
Yeah, and that's what was so interesting about today, actually. For the last say 3 or 4 years, really, production growth has been a bit of a dirty word in the oil business, because A, it means money going out the door, and B, energy transition. But we're starting to see a bit of a change, and you know, we talked about the difference in share price performance today between Exxon and Chevron, and it's pretty interesting the reasons why. Exxon's been growing production quite strongly. Guyana and the Permian, actually, you know, those two regions up 40% in the past year, where Chevron has really been struggling. They've production dropped in the first quarter. They've had some issues. The Permian is growing for them, but they've had some issues there. And really, the Permian for Chevron is simply making up for declines elsewhere in the world. So you have one company that's growing, another company that's not. And what's interesting now is that the company that's growing, ExxonMobil, is the one that's being rewarded in the stock market. And remember, a few weeks ago, BP sort of pivoted their strategy to invest a bit more in fossil fuels, and investors also rewarded them. So I think we're starting to detect a bit of a change of sentiment now, where the investment community are looking are starting to value growth in fossil fuels once again because of those shortages that we've talked about.
Can you, Simone, help me square we've been talking about this, but help me square the barrel price with these great earnings?
I think it's about demand. There are just question marks, ongoing question marks about how much demand, whether it's from China, whether it's from the U.S., whether it's from Europe, at least in the near term. I think when you look farther out, the story kind of changes. But it's this question, you know, that we've been grappling with across the economic data. We don't know how strong the consumer is. We don't know how much the central banks are going to continue hiking rates, most especially the Fed. And therefore, it's very difficult to predict where oil prices go. But, you know, to what Kevin was saying, one thing before I mention this, Kevin wrote 10 bylines today since like 6:15 a.m. And so that is really impressive.
Kevin, you on the live blog today as these earnings were, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, plus live blog, not counting that. But I would say,
great,
you know,
context.
what he's kind of saying about, you know, shareholders rewarding investment in a way they haven't before. You know, this is kind of the dichotomy as well that we are hearing between the IEA, which is a major international agency backed by some of the Western countries, and OPEC. You know, OPEC is saying, y'all haven't invested enough in natural gas or in oil for a long time. That's why we're seeing all the volatility in the market. And then here you have this more consumer-related organization saying, actually, it's just you guys. You guys are the issue.
And that's a really good point. You know, I brought up in the past, you know, having gone up to the Bakken like several years ago, when shale and just the amount of drilling that we were doing in the United States, and everybody was like, look at the U.S., you know, they're becoming energy independent. Kevin, where is the United States on all of this?
Yeah, so the U.S. is the world's biggest oil producer at the moment, because OPEC has cut back a little bit. But what's very different to now compared with the days when I imagine you went out to the Bakken is that companies are being much more restrained. Mm-hmm. They're looking very much at the future. They're looking at how many how many wells they can drill on their acreage. They're looking at moderating production growth. They're very, very focused on their near-term cash flows, making sure that they're profitable today rather than trying to drill baby drill and just ramp up production just for the sake of it. So there's a lot more caution in the shale patch compared to what we saw a few years ago, and that's why OPEC now is feels at liberty to cut production like they did at the beginning of April. They cut 1 million barrels a day, because they no longer see that threat, that market share threat from shale. And to be honest, the shale producers are quite happy for that. They're happy for OPEC to cut production and keep prices high.
What's the likelihood of more cuts from them?
The one earlier this month was a huge surprise, so I certainly wouldn't rule anything out. And it hasn't really impacted the market that much. There's definitely big concerns over economic growth, the effect of rising interest rates, here in the US and around the world. And China was the big. It's supposed to roar back this year and swallow right. up a huge amount of oil demand. It hasn't really happened yet. People say it may be happening in the second half, but we're not seeing it quite yet.
Well, and we have a story, U.S. oil heading for its 6-monthly drop because as demand outlook worsens. So we've seen like the trend line, no doubt about it. Simone, you're just back from the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. I am. And that's why I'm going to ask about natural gas, because I was in Qatar, one of the world's largest producers of natural gas. Actually, this is for Kevin. We heard this major bullish outlook from some of these oil field contractors, SLB, Baker Hughes, Halliburton, and a lot of them mentioning how much natural gas was going to be part of their business. I feel like we heard less of that today from these oil majors, even though some of them right. are moving into the space. Yeah, what's the thinking there? What's your take?
Kevin just got about 20 seconds.
Yeah, the majors are interested in gas, but they want liquefied natural gas. They want the big projects that they can ship around the world. They're not too interested in sort of the local market for gas, simply because the value is a lot lower. But definitely big projects where they can ship gas around the world. They're very, very gung ho.
Got it, Kevin. We got to run. Kevin Crowley and Simone Foxman. So appreciate it. This is Bloomberg.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Business app, and YouTube. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
Full transparency. This next guest came to us because Maddie's mom works for this company. She's head of marketing. But what we love, Maddie, about this, when you pitched it and mentioned, I'm like, we got to talk to them. They're a small business. They're in the business of moving people around. So in many ways, it's a great indicator of the economy, beyond the official statistics, like the batch we got today. It's just another way of trying to figure out where we are.
Yeah, Carol, you and I love a good low-key economic indicator
totally.
When it comes to this show. So we're going to get to it. We've got Nick Friedman here. He is, of course, the co-founder of College Hunks Hauling Junk. He's going to talk with us about the business of moving people and removing their stuff. And he joins us on Zoom from Tampa. Nick, great to have you on the show. Thanks for being here. Besides the fact that you obviously have the best marketing team in the entire world, talk to me about the business for the people who may not be familiar. I know it started right out of college, hence the name. Tell me about the size and scope and how business is doing.
Yeah, so our company, College Hunks Hauling Junk, started when I was in college with just a beat-up cargo van. Fast forward almost 20 years, 20-year overnight success. We've got now 200 franchise locations around the country, approaching $300 million in annual sales, over 5,000 employees. And it's moving and junk removal, like you said, and we've made Hunks into an acronym, which stands for Honest, Uniform, Nice, Knowledgeable Service.
Okay, so besides the acronym though, Nick, talk to me about the business side itself, right? We talk a lot about the current craziness in the housing market. Where have you seen the biggest impact when it comes to those macro factors impacting the moves that you're doing?
Well, we saw a big boom coming out of COVID. We were expecting 20, 30, 40% year-over-year growth coming out of COVID. And then this year, probably about middle of last year, we saw a significant deceleration in that growth. So we actually budgeted this year for what we could call a conservative 10% year-over-year growth. We're actually falling slightly short of that. More so impacted on our side with the junk removal service, which, as you might imagine, from a consumer standpoint, if you're holding back on some of your consumer spending, disposable income, the likelihood of paying to get rid of items would be less. But also even on the moving side, if people are moving less, obviously the interest rates are higher, the moving volume statistics are down. And so we're impacted by that as well. And we're still growing year over year in that business, but not quite as much as we had hoped for.
Nick, I'm wondering, economic indicators, what really, like, what do you watch, if any? Is it labor statistics? I'm thinking, you know, here we are, we're focused on a Friday afternoon. You've got First Republic, which has been a troubled regional bank, and it's crashing once again in the aftermarket. You've got Reuters reporting that the FDIC getting ready to place it into receivership. You know, we watch the bank sector. It creates nervousness. What is it that you watch specifically to say, okay, maybe this is where our business might go, or just kind of an indication of the outlook?
Yeah, I mean, I look closely at housing market trends. I look closely at consumer spending because we are a consumer brand primarily. And really just the overall S&P 500 is a good indicator. I mean, I look back at sort of the 2008 crash, and some of the early tremors of that are similar to me in terms of what we're seeing with some of the banking falls that you just mentioned. And so when there's bad news on Wall Street, when there's you know, ticks up in the interest rate and people are not buying homes or selling them for the price that they were a year ago, that's going to trickle down to companies like ours that are in the home services space. And we're sort of that first call they make when they are moving or when they want to upgrade their furniture or clean out their garage. They're calling us. And if that's not happening as much, or they're holding on to their wallet because their portfolio's down, that's not going to be as in demand as it has been coming out of COVID.
I know Maddie shared with us, you guys are over 200 locations. You know, some of them are small, some of them bring in several million dollars a year. I am curious, when you look at the outlook, do you think recession or do you think not recession?
I don't want to put a direct label on it, but I will tell you we're being much more conservative, you know, where one of the mantras we say within our company has always been revenue is vanity, profit is sanity, and cash flow is king. Well, we came up with another one. If cash flow is king, then lean is queen. And so we want to be lean and disciplined with our spending, maybe not be as aggressive with, you know, testing new marketing options, but be very more laser focused with how we're going to acquire clients, how we're going to convert those clients and turn those into repeat and referral business. So because of what we've experienced in the past, what I'd say 12 months, we're being more conservative, we're being more disciplined, maybe hesitating before we invest in that new piece of equipment or new piece, new key hire, because we want to make sure we focus on the cash flow and sort of be lean coming through this uncertain, volatile market.
Are you also lean because you're concerned about access to capital and the higher cost of capital?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Without a doubt, we've got to be lean as in terms of cash flow and that has a cost of capital as well. So we're being more conservative about how much we borrow, more conservative about how much we extend ourselves. Whereas maybe the past 2 years before things slowed down, it was all about grow, you know, burn the cash, burn the fuel. Let's, you know, keep pushing forward. And I studied economics in college, so I know a little enough to be dangerous. And, you know, inflation happens because we pumped a lot of money into the economy. And now, you know, the Fed is ticking up interest rates to try to slow things down. And so as a small business, medium-sized business, we're sort of feeling the effects of like the push forward and now sort of the pull back. And we're just having to make sure, you know, that those that climate is going to impact everybody. And so we just got to be more smart and strategic than everybody else.
Hey, Nick, talk to me a little bit about the demo of your customer and how it's changed, because I know you guys are kind of like the Fed, where bad economic news is really good for you. During COVID, you did really well. Coming out of that, how has your demo changed in terms of the customer, and how have their moves changed?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're actually getting a lot more moves right now for apartments, which was maybe not what we were experiencing coming out of COVID, because people were buying and selling homes, you know, like it was going out of fashion the past couple of years. And now, with the housing market slowing down, people are staying in apartment communities or moving apartment communities or moving within. We're starting to see a tick up in demand there. There's still disposable income there. That's not to say that maybe there's not an income level there that's able to hire our services, because once you fall below a certain threshold, people are going to do this themselves. They're going to move their own furniture, or they're going to get rid of their own junk. But if they're looking to hire a full service solution, they have to have some level of disposable income to be able to do that.
Well, Nick, a great perspective on what's going on. We so appreciate your time. Nick Friedman, he's co-founder of College Hunks Hauling Junk, joining us via Zoom from Tampa, Florida. Thank you so much.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing, entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
Yeah, how about you let me drive?
Oh, no, 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 no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
It's the question that drives us.
This is The Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, everybody, we have just under 18 minutes left in today's trading session. It is time for The Drive to the Close. And you heard Charlie giving you the numbers. We're pretty much holding on to our gains here when it comes to the equity side of thing. And we're counting down to the Fed meeting next week. A lot of earnings we've been getting through. We are on track, though, for some weekly gains when it comes to the major equity averages. So let's get to it. Our market guest on this Friday, Katerina Simonetti. She's Senior Vice President and Private Wealth Advisor over at Morgan Stanley Private Wealth Management, joining us once again on Zoom from Philadelphia. Katerina, I don't know about you, but I am exhausted. It's been quite a week. It's just a lot of stuff coming at us, you know, when it comes to earnings, economic news, just kind of where we are going. So here we are. We sit on a Friday. Equities seem rather enthusiastic. How do you see it?
Carolyn and Madison, thank you for having me on the show and happy Friday. And I agree with you, boy, what a week. And the question is, you know, are we looking at the market that is showing all sorts of resilience in face of the mixed earnings, in face of the risk and all the uncertainty that we seemingly are facing? And is this the sign of the health of the economy that we are maybe not accounting for, or is it being foolishly optimistic? And unfortunately, this is the difficult part for the investors, because that's where they find themselves, in these two camps, because you have one camp that is getting ready for the decline in the market, getting ready for all the risks, the pressures on earnings, the stickiness of the inflation, that it remains high to the point where Fed is not really ready to declare victory yet, possibility of economic recession, and generally the unknown of what the delayed effect the Fed action is going to yield. And then the other camp that is so excited about the fact that market has been positive this year so far, right, despite of earnings.
All right, so which camp are you in? Are you in the more optimistic that, hey, earnings seeming pretty good? Mohammed El-Erian, he was on our air earlier and said, you know, there's no guarantee that we have to go to recession. And if you look at earnings, it would point to otherwise, that maybe we'll avoid it. Are you in that camp? Are you in the camp that, yo, folks, you know, your expectations about where we are, and especially in terms of what the Fed's going to do and the slowdown, that, you know, you're missing it. So which one are you in?
I'm in the camp that the bear market is not over yet.
Okay.
And I think it will be smart to not ignore the warnings of the market and specifically the earnings, specifically the fact that this this regional bank situation might have on the availability of the liquidity and potential credit crunch that it might cause. We cannot spend the way we have been spending in this high interest rate environment, neither consumers or the institutions. And this is going to have a long lasting effect. Now, in the longer run, I'm absolutely optimistic. No bear market lasts forever. We just have to have a somewhat longer view on equities and also take advantage of the higher yields that are, you know, finally are available to us on the fixed income side.
So bigger picture then on the financials, are you advising to stay away for now because of concerns about that credit tightening?
Well, we have to be very selective. We generally have to be very selective with equities right now, but specifically with financials. There are some financial institutions that are showing tremendous strength and quite frankly are trading below where they should be. So they present some attractive buying opportunities. But there are certain parts of the financial sectors, you know, where we have to be very cautious.
You know, it is such an interesting environment at this point, and we keep reminding everybody that Fed policy, there's no exact science to it, and it's not uncommon for the Fed to, you know, overdo it, miss the mark, if you will. And so it does. We do wonder, you know, what's going to happen from here. Having said that, and we were just talking a little bit about the financials, do you feel like as investors, are you guys over at Morgan Stanley kind of shelving the banking crisis for now, and you feel like, all right, we've got this. That's one thing that we can maybe take off the wall of worry list, or not yet?
Well, to your point, what we tell clients is that the current environment is like trying to stop the fast-moving train that has no brakes. Right. You know, and you're throwing everything we have at it, and Federal Reserve is really trying to control the situation. But the question is how effective they're going to be. And we see it that while they're not run raising rates yet, we're already talking about the rate cuts. Are we going to get them later this year or possibly next year? So this banking situation, is it going to have effect? Absolutely. We are just gauging how deep of an effect it's going to be. And if we look back at 2008, we emerged from 2008 as the healthier, much better positioned financial system. And I think the lessons are going to be learned from this crisis as well. And hopefully we move forward without making these mistakes.
So you think that lesson will be what? More regulation on the banks, similar to kind of the recommendations we got from the Fed report on SVB today?
Well, I think the main lesson is going to be not underestimating interest rate risk and having sufficient levels of liquidity, but also the regulation that will be applied to all the banks at all levels, because the consumers here in the United States, you know, should be able to comfortably walk into the bank and expect the bank to be regulated on the same level as the bank across the street.
So you say stay defensive. So you're talking healthcare, energy, utilities, consumer staples. Is that fair?
That absolutely is fair. And just generally, stocks that pay dividends, that have strong competitive positioning, that have strong buying power and pricing power and the staying power in this market, it is really important these days to understand what we own. The simple, concise investment strategy that allows investors to pivot based on the ever-changing environment. So when we get to the end of the week like this, we can actually act accordingly, possibly have some cash on the sidelines, take advantage of the higher yields, and be prepared that if this market were to drop, that we can actually act and take advantage of the dips in the market.
Katarina, what about big technology? I mean, Microsoft, I'm looking at about a 7% gain for the week. I'm just throwing one name out there. I think it's safe to say, and Amazon, we just talked about a lot, that there was kind of a, you know, some concern certainly about the cloud business. But you know, overall this week, big tech, you know, really came in very strongly. It's a group that everybody keeps saying, forget it. It's time to look at other things. What is your read on big technology? Are you telling your clients, your, you know, wealthy clients that they need to stay away from tech or that they should be all in, especially when we're talking so much about AI as being the next growth driver?
Well, we are absolutely not telling them to stay away because technology is here to stay. Technology drives every single aspect of our life. But like with everything else, we have to be selective and we have to understand why the position in tech that we're taking on is going to be here a year from now, 10 years from now, potentially 30 years from now. What is that competitive advantage? And what is that ability for that technology company to generate, consistently generate earnings? We can't just view tech as this great, successful, wonderful sector that cannot fail. You know, anything, like any sector in the market, has its ups and its downs. So it's really important to own quality within technology.
All right, going to leave it on that note. Katerina, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Have a great weekend. Katerina Simonetti, she's Senior VP, Private Wealth Advisor over at Morgan Stanley Private Wealth Management on Zoom from Philadelphia. Interesting, a little bit more defensive, saying that the bear market or the bear cycle isn't over.
Tech, it's here to stay.
Yeah, well, that's fair, right?
Yeah.
We look at our lives and it makes a heck of a lot of sense.
This is the Bloomberg Business Week podcast, available on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Listen live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern on Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, TuneIn, and the Bloomberg Business app. You can also watch us live every weekday on YouTube and always on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code Radio20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.